Welcome to Sentence to Paragraph, the podcast on the space between WordCraft and the writer's life. My name is James Stiegel, and I'm joined today by Molly K. Martin.
Molly, hello. There.
And Darlyn Evans.
Good morning.
Good morning. Today, we're doing our check-ins, but we also wanted to talk about, for each of us, the book that has had the biggest effect on our writing, which is funny because I had a very difficult time choosing the single book that has had the biggest effect on my writing. But before we get into that, why don't we do some check-ins? Molly, you want to go first?
All right. So I think our goal for last time we talked was, or at least my goal for last time we talked, was to continue writing every day and then updating our spreadsheet. And what I found is I've been doing a lot of writing by hand in my notebook, which is really kind of fun for me. But then what it ends up happening is then I don't fill out the spreadsheet. So then I go for like 4 or 5 days without putting anything in the spreadsheet. But I do get some writing done. And then it's fun at the end of the day because I go back and I fill out like a week's worth of spreadsheet all at once. So it gives me a much bigger sense of accomplishment. So I have been writing every day. And that is my check-in.
How are you finding, when you write by hand, how are you finding like flow state? Is it similar for you? Do you feel like you're kind of slowed down and thinking more about the scene? Or do you find yourself having written something and then kind of wish you could go back and add bits to what you'd written?
So one of the fun things, or sort of the weird things about writing by hand, is that I don't write chronologically, which is how I always write when I'm writing at the computer. So when I'm writing by hand, I just have like an idea for like, oh, here's this little bit of the scene. So I just start writing that piece, and then I'll write a page or two of that piece. And so it's not a whole scene or anything like that. But it's just this little inspirational nugget that gets me going for a while. And then I can get my, 200 or 500 words based on that. And then when I kind of go back and I am typing it in, then I am doing more of like the editing process of putting everything around it and connecting it with the other scenes that are already in the story. So it's kind of fun to do it that way. Like if you're doing inspirational writing, I think if you're not inspired, then doing it chronologically helps because you're like, okay, I know, all the things that have happened up to this point, and all I have to do now is write what happens next.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So it's like a combination of outlining, first drafting.
Yeah.
Or would you think it's really, is it fully first drafting?
I think it's really first drafting. I'm still not like super excited about the whole I must outline like a grown-up kind of thing.
That's cool. I guess we'll let Darlyn foment a little while longer. let's see. So updates for this week. I had a really stressful week at work. We're going through some changes that have been really kind of disruptive for my whole organization. And so we've been working through those things, which makes it hard to focus and also makes it kind of hard to have time at work, like at least like lunchtime and stuff like that. Like I've been trying to take at least an hour for my lunch and get in a writing sprint during that time, which it's funny because as I've like, yeah, tracking the writing has been really working really well for me. And I've been able to, maintain the streak throughout the whole new year so far. But if I can write, like it really shows me the patterns. If I can write during the day and then write again at night, I will pretty easily break 2,500 words for that day. But if I have to write it just at night, I think there's a mental component too, because when I start writing at lunchtime, like it's kind of, I break over that sort of mental hump of like getting into a scene or starting a chapter. Okay. Setting things up, getting things going. I finally get in, get into the flow state on it. Then I kind of have to stop. So I think about that the rest of the day until it's 11 o'clock at night when I have time to write again. And then, so it's easier to jump into that. But if I'm starting just at 11, it takes me longer, I'm noticing. So, but I've been able to do at least 1,000 words a day. So I've been really happy with that. I'm kind of chasing the end of the book right now. So I have some little character bits to clean up, and then I'm writing like a last final piece where everything comes together. And I kind of hope to be done this weekend. We'll see what happens.
Yay.
Yeah.
Super exciting. You're saying that and it reminded me of is it Rachel Aaron's book, 2K to 10K?
Yeah, 2K to 10K. Mm-hmm.
And one thing I noticed about that book, I don't know that she was necessarily making the connection, but when she was having her really great days, she had like an hour or something in the morning that she wrote, and then she wrote several hours more. And I think there's something very real to that, that you kind of prime the pump, and then, as you were saying, let it, you know, sit and ferment and gestate, and then when you get back to the page, your brain has been working on that all day. Mm-hmm. So I think there, or even just an hour or two, I think there's something very real to that, because I've noticed the same thing. If I have a little bit of time in the morning to write, and then I come back in the evening, it's a lot easier to. It just seems to go much more smoothly. So, yeah. Most of my writing has been at the very end of the day, and I'm determined to write every day. But often it is several times this week, it's only been for 15 minutes. I've been doing writing sprints. So I'm not getting a ton of writing done, but I have filled in that thing every day. So that's still my goal. But it is a struggle to do that at the end of the day after all of the other things. So
yeah.
I'm hoping that I can switch and start writing in the mornings again, or at least splitting it like you are.
So. And there have been a couple times like I got a way to write, and then immediately the baby starts crying. So it's time to go do something with the baby, come back, do some more writing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm feeling like I need less sleep recently for some reason. Like I've kind of gone through a phase where now I can work until 1 a.m. or 1:30 or something, and then go to sleep, and I'm still okay. So we'll see how long that lasts.
That's good. I've had a couple times where it's like, all right, it's midnight and I'm just going to write for my 15 minutes. And I do that. And then it's like, now I actually feel excited to write. And I write for a little bit longer, and then I'm up until very late, but that's okay. It's getting done.
Mm-hmm. Yay. And I think the satisfaction that you get from the writing, you're like, oh, I had such a good writing thing. And even the next morning, you know, if you feel grumpy or tired or something like that, you can be like, but I wrote this awesome thing last night.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I accomplished something that day.
Mm-hmm.
sorry.
I think we have, we as writers have a funny, just the word accomplish, we have this funny like idea of what accomplishing something is, because everybody else is like, oh, you know, I got up and I put on pants and I went out into the world and I did whatever my job was that I had to do. And that's like what they need to accomplish during the day. And we writers are like, okay, I did, you know, all of those things, and I created this fictitious world out of nothing, and that's accomplishing something. So.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of brain work. I think people don't realize like how much focus it takes to do that. At least for me, like if I'm mentally exhausted, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But what else was I going to say? Before I got beclempt, I was just going to say like how good the tracking sheet has been for me at least. And I feel like a lot of writers out there are kind of like finding their little groups right now. And I think that's really valuable. Like if somebody out there isn't part of a, you know, a group of folks that are doing something like this, I think it could be really useful to go find that if you can. Because for me, at least, it's been a huge motivator. It's like, not only do I not want to see the empty space, but I don't want to let everybody else down.
Oh, no, it's totally good peer pressure. It's exactly. That, you know, you have accountability, but it's accountability to yourself too, because you're like, well, I don't want to let myself down, but I also kind of don't want to be embarrassed by not filling out the sheet.
I know. Must fill out the sheet. Even when I actually got out of bed once to fill out the sheet, because I forgot to do it.
This is hence my whole big long story about like, I swear I'm actually doing this, but I'm not filling out the sheet for like 4 days. God, because I want you guys to know I'm really still doing it. It's just that I'm writing by hand, and then I have to go back and like count up the words and be like, okay.
I did have a day where I would noticed it was like 3 or 4 days since she had put something in there, and I thought, do I need to call her and give her a pep talk? So I'm glad to hear that you were writing.
Well, it's funny because I'm just thinking about like back in the day how there used to be like these calculators that have, you know, if you had one regular type-spaced, you know, typewritten page or whatever, you could count the lines and average out the word count. And now it's like so easy to know what your word count is. Whereas, you know, even 15 years ago, well, probably more than that, 20 years ago, that was very difficult to get that number, you know?
Yeah. What I've started doing is I have different size notebooks, and I figured out on average how many words I write per page of that on that notebook, or per line on that notebook. So then I can say, oh, I've written, you know, 12 lines, and so therefore it's 217 words or something.
Now, can you look at the page and tell, like, when you got really into it, because your handwriting goes from being very careful to, like, you know, all
the Yeah, that's fun too. I don't know. And the other thing is just like the physicality of not having the delete key is also helpful, because then I just like, I cross through the line, or I'm not, if I do need to make like edits in the moment, which I try not to do a ton of, but if it's something like I'm like, I write something and then I'm like, this is a much better way to say this, then I just like circle it and draw an arrow back to where it's supposed to go and be like, okay, here's a paragraph. Like, here's a big arrow that's supposed to move this paragraph up. So I don't know. It's very odd to come back to writing by hand after all of these years, because that's what I started out doing.
Yeah, I did too. In fact, I've got like probably 15 notebooks I filled out when I was in the Army that I took. I would buy these like hardbound lab books. And I bought them when I was in school, and I had to special order them when I was on active duty, because I couldn't find them anywhere. And so I would take those around. And actually, I would even like on deployments, I would find like weird things and tape them to the front.
Yeah.
But I've actually kind of like, they're all at my mom's place, and I have like been scared to go back and read them. But I used to do that religiously. Like, I'd carry around these notebooks and, you know, fill them out. But
I still buy a giant stack every school, you know, the beginning of the school year. It took me years to settle on the very basic composition notebook after spending millions of dollars, I think, on those fancy journals and all the different kinds of paper. And now it is a Bic pen and a 50-cent Mead notebook. So
there you go.
But yeah. I have shelves of them over here. Although I'm having this opposite thing. For a long time, I had a really hard time composing on the computer. But through these writing sprints, I have suddenly made that switch. And I was in Nina's class last night, and didn't have my computer with me, and was going to handwrite, and I was like, no, I actually want to compose with the keyboard. So that's been a real weird switch for me, but hopefully good.
I wonder if it's just a cyclical thing, like your brain just wants some variety. Like, after a while, it's like, you know, we've typed long enough, let's do something else. I'm bored.
That's a good point. I mean, a good way to break up, even if you feel stymied or something. You know, with this project, one thing I was doing a lot of was, if I had no idea, like I had an idea where I wanted the plot to go, but I didn't know how to get the character there. And then I was also thinking all the time, like, is this cool? Is this awesome? Like, what is the most awesome thing that could happen right now? Right. And so I would just start writing and then end up, you know, something that might happen, and then figure out that, like, no, I don't like that. And so I would just delete all of that. But, handwriting could have been a way maybe to break my thoughts up on that, I guess, without wasting those words. But what I was going to say about, like, the reason I love typing now is it's almost for me like playing music. Like, I love, I use the clacky keyboards whenever I can. And so I just love, when I really get into the moment of typing, it's almost like I love the sound of the keyboard and the feeling of my fingers on the keys, which is very much like an instrument for me. So that's a thing I've kind of gone back and forth on with, which is why I love typing on keyboards.
Yep.
But Darlene looked like she was going to say something, but maybe not.
No, I thought I heard the bebé in the background. So,
oh, you might have. I think she's crying.
Aww.
Yeah. But okay. Well, what was the book that has had the biggest effect on your writing? And I could go first, or Molly, do you want to go first?
No, James, go first. We're not going to cheat off your paper.
I know. Well, I have this, Molly, I already showed it to Darlene, but I'll show it to Molly, this giant stack here of books that I had brought, but I'll choose just one. I'll put the photo on the podcast page. But it's funny, like Darlene and I were just kind of talking about this. Like, do you choose the book that got you really fired up about writing, or the book that then helped you temper your writing? And I've got a bunch of, you know, nonfiction how-to books, but I think ultimately it's for me, it's like a book that I really respect and admire and want to be, you know, a book that makes me want to be like that. And then also, as I look back on books, so I'm going to choose, I can't talk about this without choosing three books, because I feel like they kind of talk about where I'm at, but I'll keep it really short. Okay. So the first one that really inspired me to write was Harpist in the Wind by Patricia McKillop. And so I started reading, you know, seriously in junior high. That was like a big escape for me. And so, of course, I discovered fantasy. And then I discovered we had Patricia McKillop's Harpist in the Wind, her Riddle Master of Head trilogy, in my school library. And discovering that she was local to Oregon meant a lot to me, just to like, whoa, there's a writer that lives, you know, 50 miles from me. But then she was one of the first authors that I could read her paragraphs over and over again to really try and figure out, like, she definitely has a rhythm, and her level of characterization and her syntax is so much better than the regular Del Rey book at the time of Del Rey Fantasy. And it took a long time for it to sink in. And also her characters, she was one of the first writers at the time to have some really kind of equality and like equal motivations among the men and women in her books. That wasn't something I realized at the time, but as a kid, that meant like, it meant the characters were very real, even in a fantasy world. And so that really spoke to me. And I've come back, this is probably the one book that I've, or at least that trilogy, I've read probably five times at this point. It's one of my favorites. I think for anybody that she's like just a not well-known fantasy author who's consistently been putting out books like every year and is just awesome. And in my opinion, and then the next one would be James Salter. So A Sport and a Pastime is, James Salter is kind of a prose, like well-known for his prose, and he's only written like maybe seven or eight books. It's funny because as I get older, like I love his prose, but I don't like his subjects as much. I don't find them that interesting, but I'll reread these books over and over again. Like A Sport and a Pastime is actually about a guy sort of projecting on a relationship between a young man and a young woman. And it's like now, I mean, it took place in the 60s. Like there's a lot of problems with it, but the prose is just so like you read it and you're just like, how did he do that? You know, so the economy is so good, the imagery is so good. And then the last one would be Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy. And basically Cormac McCarthy just does whatever the heck he wants to do to tell the story, but it's so visceral. That's another book I've read, I think, four times at this point. And I rarely reread books. And just the power in that book is something that really inspires me all the time. So if any kind of like nonfiction book, I guess I'm just trying to use that to figure out what these folks did in their books. And that's the nonfiction doesn't typically inspire me as much as the books themselves do. So I think that's my three. I think, does that make sense?
It does. That's really good. I think it's interesting you say that about the nonfiction. I can think of craft books that are useful, but it is really about the books themselves, the novels that light you on fire, that I think are the I guess what's real. It's what makes us want to write. So the most important part about this.
For me, at least.
Yeah.
I went and got my visual aids real quick. And so I have several books to talk about as well. The first that I want to talk about, and I felt kind of bad about leaving out Stephen King's On Writing. So I'll mention that really briefly, just because it was the first book on writing that I had ever read, like when I started kind of thinking like I'm actually going to be a serious writer. And I felt really odd about purchasing the book because it was like an admission, like, I'm really going to do this. Like I felt like now I'm spending money to learn how to be a writer. So it makes it seem more legitimate. So that was impactful. But the three books that I have chosen to talk about today briefly are Thanks, But This Isn't For Us. And it is a sort of compassionate guide to why your writing is being rejected. And it's also actually by a writer from the Pacific Northwest, Jessica Page Morrell. And it has like each chapter kind of breaks down, like, here's the different things that you can be doing wrong in your book. And then it has exercises that kind of help you figure out how to fix those things and to understand like what are editors and agents and people in the publishing industry really looking for in a book, and kind of how do you balance that with what do you as a writer want to write and what's the story that you're trying to tell. So That I've read it a couple of times, and every single time I always come away with new stuff that makes my writing better. So then my second book is Steering the Craft by Ursula Le Guin. And it's a little bit more advanced. So that's one of the things that I like about it, because I find that a lot of writing advice for writers is like, okay, if you're just starting out, here's how to do a basic sentence. You know, so it's pretty, it is pretty low level advice for new writers. And hers is, okay, like, we expect that you're at this higher level of writing, and here's how you move forward from that. And then my third favorite writing book is Eat Shoots and Leaves. And it's got pandas. It's I have the illustrated edition, so it's got all these fun little panda comics, and it's all about grammar and punctuation. And so it has this wonderful joke about, you know, how a panda eats shoots and leaves. And it's got a cowboy panda on it. So those are my three writing books.
Ursula Le Guin's was on my list as well. I really like Steering the Craft.
Yeah. So those are my three books. Do I want to say more about that, or should we hand this off to Darylin?
Do you want to talk about any novels that might have been influential?
So books that I have read that are influential. Honestly, I still go back to Robin Hobb and her Assassin's Apprentice trilogy, because I started reading that. I don't know, maybe it was just that I picked it up like at the age when I was just perfect for getting into fantasy. Or maybe it's just that it's been running for so long. It's like been a part of my life that now that the trilogy of trilogies is over, I'm still like mourning the loss of those characters. And then the other one real recently was the Red Rising trilogy. And I know you guys keep hearing this from me all the time. I was like, my Red Rising,
You know, I have those and I haven't read them yet.
Oh my goodness.
Our friend Justin was
jealous
like,
of you.
Thing. Like, you got to read his books. And I just
well, that, you know, I resisted for a long time too, because Justin was like, you got to read them. And sometimes when people are like, come on really strong and you're like, you have to read this book. I'm like, but guess what? I won't.
Well, it's one of those where I kind of knowing it's because it's on the verge of YA, right? Like,
It's kind of, I wouldn't say that it's on the verge of YA. I would say it's like, if Hunger Games were grown up, that's what it would be like.
Okay. Well, because I was hoping my son would want to read it with me, and he didn't.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of like, oh, well, if the target market doesn't want to read it, maybe it's not blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I need to read it. Because there's a whole series now. There's like four of them, I think, right?
There's three in the original series, and then he's writing like another follow-on series to that series, which has one in that, and then the second one's coming out, I think, in July. Mm-hmm. Not that I like eagerly check my email every single day for an update or anything like that, because I'm totally not obsessed.
Nice.
Wow, I thought I went down that rabbit hole, but you went down it a lot harder,
didn't? Oh no, I went down hard.
Yeah, I was not excited to start those books because military boarding school, it's a guy protagonist. I was not excited. And man, 3 days later when I came out of reading all three of them, they're very good. They're excellent. I think they're doing what I think those books are doing really well is that they navigate just, you know, a great story, great storytelling skills, and how good he is at introducing conflict and navigating through it with really good prose. Like, his sentences are good, his imagery is good. It's not, he doesn't take a lot of shortcuts or rely on, just Dan Brown crappy language or, you know, sentences or whatever to get through. Like, everything is really good about those. So, but I guess I should talk about my actual books that I was going to talk about. So for me, this one was, this is always kind of hard for me. I guess the books that lit me on fire when I was about 12 or 13 and really getting into writing and, but also reading were the Anne McCaffrey's Dragon Rider series. And then the Harper series that goes along with it. And those, I think part of it was that I was reading through my brother's sci-fi books and they're all about guys. And part of that was that this was about, it had women, and as you were kind of saying, James, that it, you know, women who had equal, they were just the main characters, and also they had more, you know, they had real positions in the story, and the politics of it, and that I guess just the whole global story of it just really lit me on fire. So I loved those and that, but they also made me really want to write stories in a way that reading other ones didn't. But then as a grown up, I kind of got away from writing for a while. And then what really brought me back to writing was The Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver just blew my head off. And it isn't that I had totally stepped away from writing. I wanted to write, but I wasn't writing. And that one really brought me back to the page and just, oh my gosh, that was such, it's just all the layers of what she does in that book were so amazing. The politics but also it was this family saga. And I guess I'm sure I had read many of them, but just to watch these women and to see these different point of view characters, oh my gosh, that was amazing. And that just really wanted me to, or made me want to tear apart the craft of the book and really see how she had done that. That was such a good story. Mm-hmm. And then I guess for a craft, mine is less crafty and more the other thing that really brought me back to writing and let me see it as a possibility for like what I could really do with my life and not just be an accountant and a business manager was Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones. That one really helped me be a creative being because I didn't see myself as that beforehand. So I think that one was super vital and is still a thing I do. I go back to it quite a bit. So cool. All of breaking out of I guess, I don't know, just breaking out and getting back into creativity.
Mm-hmm. I really love that one too. And I'm just going to like jump onto this as well. I think the thing that I like about it so much is it's kind of like a devotional for writers. Like you don't really have to read it in order and all of the little, I mean, it's just little vignettes and each one of them is like two or three pages. So you can just kind of pick it up and riffle through it and find something.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to mention a couple nonfiction books just because I feel like I should have done that. people are listening to this like, we don't care what your favorite books are. I think for like when I first started out writing short stories, Damon Knight's Creating Short Fiction, I think is still very relevant to anybody trying to write science fiction, short fiction today. And Damon Knight is one of those, he's very prescriptive and he really wants to tell you exactly how it should be. But it's the kind of book that I think you can argue with. And it's a deal where, you know, once you learn how to build the table, then you can build a crazy table and do whatever you want. And he's really good about laying down the basics. And same thing with John Gardner. So John Gardner is another really divisive figure in writing, teaching writing, but he did. I still think about things that guy said about the English language and even say, you know, Saxon words versus Latin and what kind of words, how I'm using language within the story is, I still think about that as much as I think he's kind of a jerk. And you will think that when you're reading the book, like this guy's a jerk.
I cannot read that. And I unrecommend that book.
Really?
I think it's had such a negative reaction to it. So,
yeah. That's the thing. I mean, I think he's the kind of guy that if he was still alive and hadn't died, you know, in a drunk motorcycle accident, we'd be like hearing about all kinds of scandals these days because of what a jerk he was. But I do, it's, you know, when you think about books, I think about that book still like sticks in my mind, you know. Another one would be The Writer's Journey by Vogler. And so he really just breaks down and there's like, that's kind of two books together. So The Story Grid by Sean Coyne, which I actually just gave away as a gift. And it was weird because it was like, I love that book and it's actually kind of an expensive book, but it was like, I want someone else to have this book because it was so useful to me. Because those two books really get into, I feel like, the nuts and bolts of how to build at least kind of like the hero's journey adventure story. If you're trying to write something different, it might not be as applicable. But once you read those two books, like, you can't watch an adventure movie or read an adventure book without being like, oh, here, you know, here's the hero. Here's the, you know, deny the call. Here's the, you know, the wise.
Here's the test and trials. Yeah. Here's the mentor. Here's
now they're going into the normal world, into the sub world. And like, but it really, all of a sudden you break down, like, it's like story opens up and you realize that a lot of stories all do the same thing. And so I think when a story doesn't do that and the author meant to do that, it makes it really interesting. And the story grid, like, is incredibly anal about breaking it down into all the different ways that you can do that. So I think I kind of got there from Eric Witchie's work, where I think Eric is incredibly, like, if you're looking for a flowchart on how to do something, like, Eric will really help you do that. And these books kind of like connected some of those ideas for me. So,
yeah, I kind of wish that Eric Witchie had a book that we could recommend, because I think all of us would recommend that.
I sure do.
If he had something. So we'll, yes. In lieu of that, we'll recommend that if you can take any of his classes or get a hold of any of his materials, do that.
And he does travel. Like, does he do East Coast stuff? I mean, he definitely does a lot of different West Coast stuff.
I don't think I've ever seen him doing East Coast stuff. Just because I'm here. So
you could host him.
I know.
There will be a video series soon.
That will be good. Everyone should do that. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. You know, it's funny, like, I just heard of a couple of books I'd never heard of. So that's always really interesting to me to find new things to look into. I'm kind of a junkie when it comes to writing books.
So. Yeah. I have a shelf that is just like books about writing. And on the one hand, I'm like, ooh, cause I can't resist, especially if it's at a used bookstore, because then I'm like, oh, but it's only like $1.50.
Right.
So, well,
and even if there's one paragraph in there that's useful, it's like, it's worth it, you know?
Yeah.
It's also interesting to me, like, I cruise, you know, St. Denis, like, the thrift bookstores around here a lot, and they have a whole writing bookshelf. And so it's interesting to look at the ones I see over and over again. And then the ones like, oh, I've never seen that one before. Like, you know, and then did someone actually read it, or was it obvious it was given as a gift and nobody ever did anything with this book? That's something that I always look at.
This Smith book Family great. Books also has a really good section on writing, like books on writing. And it also has a lot more books on editing, kind of like the crafty piece and less on the inspirational piece, because it's all meant for the college kids. So that's a good place to go to.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, Molly, do you have any editing tips for us this week?
I do. So my editing tip, I'm going to take from Douglas Adams from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And I will tell you to, if you're going to start starting something, stop starting to start and start. I probably mangled that a lot, but it's in one of the Hitchhiker books. And the problem that I find with this, and this is something that editors will just, all of them will take this out. If it gets to your editor, they're going to charge you more to take it out of your book. So just take it out now, is when people start doing things. People start running, people start reading, people start thinking, people start listening to something, people start doing something. And where this comes from, so funnily enough, because I also speak Russian, so in Russian, there's kind of two different ways to do verbs, and the way that we think of them in English is imperfective and perfective verbs. And a perfective verb, because you don't have to remember this from high school, is a verb that is completed. It happens once, and it's done. And an imperfective verb, or is either a habitual verb that happens, you know, every day you do the same thing, or it's something that is ongoing. So it's in the process of being done, but it hasn't been completed. And in English, we don't really have a good way to signal between whether it's perfective or imperfective, because they kind of, most verbs look the same. In Russian, they have different ways, like different endings and different forms of the verb that says, like, this one is done and this one is a habit. So in English, what we do is we say he started doing something, or he was doing it. And we have kind of that continuing, like it's a signal, but we kind of have to do a lot more dressing up of our words. But because we do that so much with imperfective verbs to try to show people that they're imperfective, we get in the habit of making all of our verbs imperfective. And what you as a writer need to do is to decide if this character has done something, then they've just done it and they've completed it and it's done. So what it does when you're using the imperfective when you should be using the perfective is it confuses the reader. So like, well, did they finish eating the toast? Because it says he started eating the toast. I don't know if he took two bites and then he put it down, or if he's just going to be eating toast for the rest of the scene, or if he just eats so much toast. Like what's going on with this toast? So subconsciously in our little English-speaking brains, we're like, there was toast that was introduced and there's no resolution to the toast. So don't leave people with uneaten toast.
That is fascinating. That's a great way of explaining that. I mean, even I'm thinking like, okay, well, eat is kind of a, you know, bit, chomped, you know, gobbled. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like other words, because even like looking for other weak words in that, like, because I'll do a search for starting,
mm-hmm. you know, yes, I'm going through a manuscript,
and then for me, it leads to other weak verbs that I might be using. So if I'm just saying ate or talked or ran, you know, ran, of course, in adventure sci-fi, it's all over the place. So like mm-hmm. looking for ways I can, to me, that's a signal of my own writing where I didn't stop and think about that enough. And so where can I insert a better, more evocative verb, you know, there? So.
Well, James gets his gold star for the day.
That's something I think about quite a bit. Like, oh, I just wrote starting. Stop. Don't do that.
Yeah. Stop starting to start and start.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. That's awesome. Okay. Now my mind is kind of spinning. What are y'all going to be working on for the next week?
I'm going to be working on filling up the writing every day chart, especially because we're doing a 4-year-old's pool birthday party, and that's just going to be mad. Mm-hmm. So pool gird party. Your loins. Oh, no, that's how I got a 4-year-old in the beginning. all right. Not suitable for work.
Not suitable for work. Let's see. I am just basically trying to finish this book. I would love to finish it this weekend, so I've at least got a first draft, because we don't necessarily have a deadline on this one. We've been working for March 22nd, but we're rapidly getting into our whole editing window. And so one thing I'm realizing is not having ongoing deadlines is kind of making, I don't know, my plan for the year. I'd hope to get a certain number of books, and I want to hope and get this one out so we can start pushing ahead. But it's taken a little while to get the book started. So at least we're in a place now where I think the series is set up. It'll be easier to write the next ones and we can stay on the timeline. But anyway, that's what I want to do is finish that and hopefully get a little bit of sleep. We'll see.
Okay, yes. Good luck.
Sleep, what's that? I didn't totally finish my check-in, and that is that I'm decided on a whim that I would take Nina Creaky Hoffman's short story class. And I had to do the walk of shame this last week because I did not get a short story done to turn in, because the week went a little bit sideways. So I am going to be completing a beautiful short story so that I can turn it in and erase that demerit from my psyche and continue my writing streak. I need to move from 15-minute to 20-minute writing sprints. So that's what I'm going to try.
Rock and roll. Yeah, you don't want Nina's mean face. Or actually her disappointed face.
I know, her disappointed face was like...
You didn't bring a story?
Oh, yes.
I expected so much of you and
I know.
You brought nothing.
And then you're like, Nina Hoffman was excited to get one of my stories and I didn't deliver.
Right?
I only say this because it's not like I've been there before, because I've been there before.
Yes, it's a painful thing. So it's going to be a good week, though.
Awesome. All right. Awesome.
Okay. Well, thanks for checking in. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Good week. Bye.
Bye.